Good morning, everybody. Today's a special day for us. We have a guest speaker. Our guest speaker today is Ted Kim. Now, some of you heard Ted in the spring. Ted is actually the guy that we've chosen to be our new senior associate starting next June. And so we have to be patient. He's coming. However, we're doing a diversity conference this week. Here at the Vineyard from Tuesday evening through Thursday. And so Ted was coming out for the conference, and I said, why don't you come a couple days early, then you can speak on Sunday. And so here he is, and we're glad to have him. And also, after this service, he's going to be out by the coffee bar, where there is no coffee, but where the coffee bar used to be. The bar is still there, just not the coffee. Todd will be there if you would like to get a chance to talk to him afterwards. So let's welcome Ted Kim.
Good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, I suppose. Bit of a time warp here. It is so good to be with you. I'm so happy to be here. Oh, man, we are so thrilled to have been invited to come. My wife and I have been talking about it. We're just awash with excitement. My kids actually love this place. So I have a six-year-old, a three-year-old, a one-year-old, and my six-year-old, she's like, when are we moving to Chicago? You know, my three-year-old says whatever my six-year-old says, so I think he's excited, too. So we're really, really excited. And we believe, Brittany and I really believe that this is supposed to be the next step for us, that God really has spoken to us about it. We've probably received no less than 11 or no less than 11 different people who really didn't have any idea about what was going on, gave us prophetic words about this next step. And so I think I told that to Steve and Bill, and I know in his lengthy announcement he mentioned some of those things, but when we were interviewing with Steve and Bill, I said if we were offered the job, to turn it down would feel like disobedience. And Steve, of course, he loved that. Not the disobedience part, but he, you know, you understand what I mean. So anyway, we believe that this next step for us is something that God really wants for us. And we've also been a little bit puzzled by the fact that it's not going to happen right away, because we just can't wait to come out here. But what we've come to believe, as we've thought about it, is we've come to believe that it's not only for God's will for us to kind of come, but it's also God's will for us to wait, too. That the waiting until June 1st of next year is part of the plan. And I don't say that because I say that not because I think that we have a lot to do in Syracuse, that I have a lot more work to do before I come. We have this, I've been talking to the other service that we have this big bucket list of things that we want to do in central New York before we come to Chicago. And I just have to tell you that we've already done all of them because there's not that much to do in Syracuse. And so we think, oh, well, we got that checked off. It's not really about what we need to do, it's more about the nature of waiting. Because I've come to believe, as I've been thinking about waiting a lot over the last month and a half, that waiting is actually a gift to us. Now, I think I can safely say that most of us hate waiting, though. Anybody? Do you love waiting? Who loves to wait? Who loves to wait in line? Who loves to wait at the DMV? Anybody? Chicago DMV, legendary in the country for you know, all the wonderful things at the DMV. You know, who likes to wait for web pages to load on their phones? Anybody? No.
YouTube lets you play Snake while it's loading.
Right. Okay. See, so we're trying to figure out different ways that we can distract ourselves as we wait. We've monetized hurry, haven't we? I mean, like, that's why we pay extra money for faster internet. That's why we pay extra money when we're traveling overseas and we need our passports because we haven't updated them in a while. And we're like, oh, no, we need our passports, but they won't come to me for another 5 weeks. So I'm going to pay
you a lot of money to get them to me a week faster or 2 weeks faster, maybe even not that much faster. We've monetized her. We pay extra money at amusement parks to get buy bracelets so that we can skip the lines. We just don't like waiting very much. In fact, we're conditioned by our culture to not like it. And on an even deeper level, we don't much like waiting on the Lord either, do we? Waiting on answered prayer, waiting on healing, waiting on the Lord to deliver us from a tricky situation, waiting on the Lord for a baby, waiting on the Lord for heaven. It's hard to wait on the Lord. But did you know that when you wait on the Lord, you're in good company? I mean, nearly every person that you're probably familiar with in the Bible, they had to wait on the Lord. Consider Abraham. Now, I grew up in an immigrant Korean church, and so we didn't really sing this song, but do you know the song that is sung about Abraham? Anybody? Father Abraham had many sons. Had many sons had Father Abraham. Well, you know, did you know that that song's actually not true? Because Abraham didn't actually have very many sons. Abraham and his wife Sarah waited almost 100 years to have one son. You know, two if you count Ishmael. Also Hannah, who waited and waited and prayed in a lot of dread and desperation for a child and eventually was able to have a little boy named Samuel. You consider David, the king who was anointed to be king when he was a teenage shepherd boy and didn't become a king until he was later in his 30s. So he waited, and in the intervening time when he waited, did you know that he almost died? He was almost killed a bunch of times by a man named Saul, who was his predecessor, who incidentally couldn't wait for 7 days, and that's why the kingdom was torn from him. At least one of the reasons why. Fast forward to the New Testament, consider the apostles who waited in fear and dread and desperation in the upper room. They waited after Jesus was crucified, their hope completely gone, only to have it all restored back to them when he was risen from the dead, resurrected, and by that resurrection, he demonstrated his victory over sin and death and over hopelessness too. Well, did you know they had to wait again? They had to wait again. When Jesus ascended, he said, "Wait for my power to come to you from on high so that you will be the witnesses to all the earth." They had to wait. And see, here's the thing about waiting. Waiting is not just a characteristic or a feature of these stories. It's also something that we're commanded to do. Consider Psalm 27:14, written by the aforementioned David. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. Consider Psalm 37. Be still before the Lord and everybody, wait patiently for him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Isaiah 30, verse 18 says, "Yet the Lord longs to be gracious to you. Therefore he will rise up to show you compassion. For the Lord is a God of justice. Blessed are all who," everybody, "wait for him." And finally, Lamentations 3, verse 26 says, "It is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord." It is good to wait quietly for the Lord's deliverance. It's good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. What does that mean? Well, that means that it's good for us to wait quietly on the Lord. That means that it's not just for the common good, it's also about you and me. That it is for our well-being, for our flourishing, to wait on the Lord. What if we can't become the people we long to be unless we learn how to wait? What if we can't flourish as people loved by God and bought by his blood unless we learn how to wait? What if everything that we long to be and become can't happen unless we accept waiting or embrace waiting as a gift to us? And so, yes, we're not coming for a little bit till June for us, which is sad for us because we really want to come, but we've also come to believe that this time maybe is a gift to us. And so what I'd like to do for the rest of our time is I'd actually like to talk about why waiting is a gift, and I'd like to give us one way that we may be able to embrace it as a practice, all right? And so in order to do that, we need to look at a story from the Bible about a man named Joseph, who incidentally had to wait. Joseph, at the end of the book of Genesis, we're going to just do a brief overview of his story through this video, so check this out.
So Jacob goes on from there to have 12 sons, big family. But Jacob loves his 11th son, Joseph, way more than all the others. And so he gives him the special Technicolor dream coat. And his brothers, because of this, come to hate him.
So much so that they plan on killing him.
But they don't. They instead just sell him as a slave down in Egypt.
Now, while in Egypt, through this crazy series of events, Joseph goes from being in a prison cell to becoming the second in command there.
And so later on, the whole Middle East falls into this food shortage. And Joseph's brothers, they come down to Egypt looking for food. And then when they get there, who should they find as the ruler of the whole land?
It's Joseph, that guy they sold into slavery. But he actually saves them from starving to death.
And so here you have it. These are the great-grandchildren of Abraham who have done this heinous act to their brother, but God has transformed their evil into something good.
And that's exactly what Joseph says here in the last paragraph of the entire book. He says, "You guys planned all of this for evil, but God planned it for good, to save people's lives."
So the story of Joseph teaches us two lessons about waiting that I want to tease out. The first lesson that it teaches us about waiting is that waiting is formational. In other words, waiting is something that shapes us. Waiting is something that changes us. Waiting is something that makes us into different kind of people. Now, the video does a great job at detailing Joseph's place with his brothers. They really don't like him very much, do they? No, they actually truly hate him. But the Bible tells us a little bit more about why. So in Genesis 37, verse 2, Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Joseph, a young man of 17, brings a bad report about his brothers to their father. "I have a 6-year-old, I have a 3-year-old, I have a 1-year-old at home, and they love to bring bad reports about their siblings to me, or to their mother. But they are 6 and they are 3, and the 1-year-old doesn't really talk, so she doesn't really do it. She just kind of putters around. They're not 17. And they're not also 17-year-olds at that context, which is probably a lot older than 17-year-olds today to a certain degree, you know. But here he is giving a bad report about his brothers. Now, Israel, in verse 3, loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to them." Now, how did his brothers see that their father loved Joseph more than any of them? Well, he probably wore that coat, and he probably wore it a lot. Probably not very smart. And then Joseph has a dream in verse 5. It doesn't get any better for Joseph. "And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more." Verse 6, he said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." Thank you, Joseph. His brother said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. That was the first dream. Then he has another dream, and he decides to tell his brothers the other dream too. And in his other dream, he says, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." So he tells his father this time, as well as his brothers, His father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" Not one dream, two dreams. Now, I have little kids at home. How many of you have children? More than one child. If you see one of your children acting like Joseph, what do you tell that child? Probably not to continue doing the thing that Joseph was doing. I think that one of the things that we learn from this piece of Genesis is that Joseph was kind of a brat. It's a little bit of a brat. And so his brothers, who hate him, decide to sell him into slavery. And so he ends up in the home of Potiphar, who is the captain of Pharaoh's guard. He languishes there for a little bit. He becomes the head of Potiphar's household. Then he's wrongfully accused of misconduct. He ends up in prison. He ends up in there for a while. Then, much, much later, Pharaoh has some dreams about what's going to happen to Egypt. And who should interpret those dreams but Joseph? So Joseph interprets those dreams, and then he ends up in charge of Egypt, basically second in command. And the Bible tells us, Steve and I were looking at this earlier, the Bible tells us that when 13 years after Joseph had those dreams with his family, he assumed second in command. So this is 13 years later. 7 years of plenty happen, and Joseph's in charge. So he stores the food up in a very, very wise manner, so there's plenty of food for them when the inevitable famine comes, which is what happens next. So 2 years into that famine, his brothers and his father are in the promised land, and they are starving. And they look at each other, and they say, well, we'll go get food, because we know there's food in Egypt, so we're going to go to Egypt and get food, right? So they go to Egypt, the brothers do, and whose doorstep do they arrive at but Joseph's? Which could be really bad news for the brothers. Having sold him into slavery, having never spoken a kind word to him, could be bad news. But the good news for them is that the waiting has changed Joseph. The waiting has been formational for Joseph. The waiting has shaped Joseph. It's made him into a different person. He gets a dream when he's 17 that his brothers will bow down to him. The fruition of that dream doesn't come until much, much later when he's almost 40 and he's different. Because that's what waiting does. It changes us. It shapes us. By all accounts, looking at Joseph's life, you could say these dreams are not coming true, but they do. And when his brothers bow before him, rather than taking vengeance on them, or even lording it over them in a petty way, he shows them kindness. Because he's different. He's different now. Now, the video summarized his conversation with his brothers, but I want to read to you what he actually says from the text. In Genesis 45, he says, "I am your brother Joseph." They don't recognize him. They think he's long dead. And so he reveals himself to his brothers, and he says, "I am your brother, the one you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now, there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years, there will be no plowing and reaping. But, verse 7, God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance." If you compare the two ways that Joseph spoke to his brothers, they're pretty different, aren't they? Because he's different. The waiting has changed him. The waiting has shaped him. And not only is he kind, but he has perspective on what God was doing. And not only does he have perspective, he's also generous. Because if you keep reading in verse 10 and 11, he basically says, "You shall live in the region of Goshen and be near me. You, your children, your grandchildren, your flocks and herds, and all you have, I will provide for you there, because 5 years of famine are still to come. Otherwise, you and your household and all who belong to you will become destitute." He's kinder, he has perspective, and he's providing for his family. It's a much different picture of Joseph. I was reading this blog post by a Christian person on waiting, and they quoted this anonymous quote, and here it is. It's, if we never learn to wait, for if we never learn to wait, we will never learn to love someone other than ourselves. For if we never learn to wait, we will never learn to love someone other than ourselves. I mean, isn't that Joseph's story? I mean, Joseph was awash with love for himself, probably. And he ends up a much changed person who demonstrates not only love for his family, but also a perspective of love for a country. He's a different person. That's part of the reason why waiting is such a gift to us. If we learn how to wait, it shapes us, it changes us, and it bends us to the character of Jesus. That's what it does. All right, the second lesson that we learn about waiting from Joseph's story is we learn that Joseph's story, we learn that waiting is sacramental. So we learn that waiting is formational. We also learn that it's sacramental. And what do I mean by sacramental? I simply mean that waiting is a means of grace to you and me, that waiting mediates God's presence to us in a special, concentrated way, that waiting is pregnant. It's full of God. That's what I mean. Waiting is sacramental. That's what we learn. As Joseph waited for his deliverance, as Joseph waited for the fulfillment of his dreams from God, the Bible tells us in Genesis 39, verse 2, the Lord was what? With Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered. And while he was in Potiphar's house, it continues and says, when his master saw that the Lord was with him and the Lord gave him success in everything he did, what did he do? He found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. He moved from slave to attendant, and then all of a sudden he was in charge of Potiphar's household. Right? When he is wrongfully accused of misconduct, he ends up in prison. And what does the Bible tell us about Joseph in prison? That despite outward circumstances, verse 20, while Joseph was there in prison, verse 21, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So much favor that he ends up in charge of the prison. Later, when Joseph interprets Pharaoh's dreams, Pharaoh gives Joseph charge of all of Egypt. And the reason that he gives for it is in chapter 41. Can we find anyone like this man, Joseph, one in whom is the Spirit of God? Even Pharaoh recognizes that the Lord is with Joseph. Even Pharaoh can see that God is with Joseph. And it's not God with Joseph in an idle way. God's also at work. God is carefully positioning Joseph. It's sacramental in the sense that he's with Joseph, but it's also sacramental in the sense that God is active and he's moving. He's carefully positioning Joseph. If you think about Potiphar's household, it was probably pretty large. He was, after all, the captain of Pharaoh's guard. And so when he had charge of Pharaoh's household, it was probably quite a bit. But then you think about him being in charge of a prison, which is probably a lot bigger. And then you think of him being in charge of a country, which is much, much larger. And you have to wonder, could Joseph have done that unless he had learned how to do the household of Potiphar and the prison along the way? God was at work in Joseph's life. And isn't it funny that sometimes when we're waiting on something, and even when outward appearance would look like maybe we're going the other direction, that God could be especially at work in those times? That's pretty crazy, isn't it? You know, I keep talking about my little kids, my 6-year-old, my 3-year-old, my 1-year-old. My 6-year-old can pretty much change her clothes by herself. My 3-year-old can do it about 50% of the time. The other 50%, there's a lot of wailing involved, right? My 1-year-old can't do it at all. My 1-year-old, she's a little precocious bulldog. Incidentally, she loves Steve. You know, when we were here, I mean, like, my 6-year-old really wants to come back because she loved the kids' ministry. My 3-year-old will go with whatever my 6-year-old wants, and my 1-year-old loves Steve. So, see, we were here about a month ago, and if I didn't know where she was probably being held by Steve, which was a lot of fun. Well, I just want to say that when I change my one-year-old, it's a lot easier for me to change her when she's waiting patiently for me to do it. Instead of running around or trying to kick me, which she likes to do with her soft padded feet. She likes to just kick me in the face or kick me in the chest or whatever. She loves to kick me, but it's a lot easier for me to change her when she's waiting patiently for me to do it. And I kind of think, not that we're all toddlers, you know, but I kind of think that's sort of what it's like when we're waiting patiently on the Lord. That lots can happen if we learn how to do it patiently and we learn how to embrace it. And you know, some of my best times with my kids are when I'm changing them. I can smush their little bellies, you know. They're with my, you know, like give them little kisses. I can tickle them. I can actually talk to them because they're not running away from me or doing something, you know. So there's like a sacramental nature of me being with them when I'm actually changing them. And I think that's why as we look at this next season, we look at it with a little bit of relish. Because we think that if we can learn how to embrace that, we'll come out on the other side much, much different. And so what I'd like to do to close is I'd like to actually give us a chance to practice a little bit of this waiting on the Lord. You know, I have one application. That application is just this. What if we were to take the ordinary times of waiting that we all experience, you know, the ordinary times of waiting in traffic or the ordinary times of waiting in line at the grocery store, the ordinary times of waiting for our kids to come out of school when we're waiting to pick them up after school. What if we took those times and we made them sacred space? We made them spaces where we train ourselves to wait, tune ourselves to the deeper rhythm of actually waiting on the Lord. What if we did that? I think we'd be really different. Did you know that the average person who lives in America, by the time that they die, they will have waited for at least 5 years. 5 years. 6 months of that at traffic stops. If you have small children, 1 year waiting for them to put on their shoes, you know. Putting on their shoes, I'm telling you, I wait a long time for my kids to put on their shoes. It's a 3-5-step process. Find the shoes, it's the first step, right? Both shoes, not just one. The right shoes, the shoes that match. You know, I mean, we spend a lot of time waiting, don't we? And if you live in Chicago, how much time do you wait in traffic? You wait a long time in traffic. What if you took that time and you changed it into a cathedral? And you began to ask yourself the question, how can I tune myself to the deeper rhythm of waiting on you, Lord? So you turn off your podcast, or you turn off whatever you're listening to in the car, or you take out your AirPods while you're riding the L, and you stick them back in their charging case, and you instead got quiet, and you asked yourself three questions. First question: what is God doing in me? So that's the formational question, right? What is he doing in me? What's he doing to shape me? Second question: what is God doing around me? That's the sacramental question, right? What is God doing? How is he at work around me, right? And then the third question: how can I partner with God in what he is doing in and around me? So what if we shut off everything we were listening to, shut off our music, shut off the incessant noise that seems to kind of come at us in our peculiar, hurried and harried age, and we actually asked those questions and we got quiet. Could we do that? I think it would be deeply transformational. I think we would become aware of God and what he was doing and how he was with us in a more profound way. And so I'd like for us, as we think about embracing waiting as a gift, to ask ourselves these three questions. And so to close, what I'd love to do is I'd love for us to start that process now. Is that okay? Can we do that now? So let's close our eyes for a moment. I'm going to invite the presence of God to come and be with us. And then what I'd love for you to do, love for you, as soon as you feel ready, to open your eyes and to begin to interact with these questions. Even if you don't hear anything, even if it's just being quiet before God, that's a good thing. But we begin just to ask ourselves these questions whenever you're ready. They're going to cycle through these questions. And I'm going to invite the band to come back up because they're going to lead us in one more song. We're going to give ourselves space to ask these questions and to listen and to enjoy being with God because he's here with us. So come, Holy Spirit. Come. Come and speak to us. Come and meet us. And whenever you're ready, and open your eyes, begin to interact with the questions. I'm going to take some time. It's going to be quiet for a little bit. I know that feels a little weird, but that's all right. I'm going to just be quiet for a little bit, go through these questions. And then after a little bit of space, I think Matt's going to lead us in a song.
I'm going to sing one last worship song. And if you're ready, I would encourage you to stand and sing with us. But if you're still in a place of waiting and you really feel like God is meeting you there, if you feel that peace that I was talking about, or you really feel like God is speaking to you, particularly on one of these three points that have been going across the screen, I would encourage you to just stay in that place, even as we sing, and just really just bathe in the presence of God right now. Just reap the benefit of the waiting.